Exactly. As Dr. Rimmer said, the presentation today is on a physical activity and nutrition telephone intervention, which I think sits kind of nicely between the two that we've seen already, the community-based program and then the web-based program. So this kind of sits somewhere in between there, and I'll talk a little bit more about that as we get towards the implications of the study. There are no relationships for us to disclose here. So just to give kind of some background, and again, some of the presenters have touched on this stuff already, but specifically as it relates to our study, what we see in the population of people with disabilities is this pattern of a lot of barriers to healthy behaviors, which results in decreased physical activity levels, specifically here, and lower nutrition status, which then leads to this higher rate of secondary conditions and higher rates of obesity throughout the population. We see in obesity that in people with disabilities, there's reports of up to 66% higher rates than in the general population. So it's a significant issue that needs to be addressed through health promotion programming. And we know primarily through research in the general population that physical activity and nutrition are both significant contributors to weight management. So if we can intervene there, we can hopefully have an impact then on health status and specifically obesity. But we also see, as reported by individuals with disabilities, that there are a ton of barriers that they experience, which a lot of what we see is cost and transportation and accessible facilities. A lack of personal knowledge about where to be active and how to be active, as well as a lack of professional knowledge about how to assist individuals with disabilities in becoming active. And so this together creates kind of this pattern of a lower health status. So what we would like to do is have health promotion interventions intervene in a way that then removes barriers to healthy behaviors, ultimately improving healthy behaviors, physical activity and nutrition, and lowering the incidence of secondary conditions and obesity. In order to accomplish this, these programs, what's being revealed through the research is that they need to be person-centered, so revolving around the individual needs of that person and not just kind of these rote programs that don't necessarily meet the individual where they're at. Cost effectiveness, we need to address that barrier of cost in the way that the program is delivered, and then culturally sensitive and contextually relevant to the lives of the individual. And we're just beginning to explore that in people with disabilities. And so one of the programs that has been done, which is kind of a precursor to the study that we're showing here, was the PEP-1 study done by Rimmer, and that study was a phone intervention as well, but there was an on-site piece to that, a monthly on-site piece, and that resulted in a 7% weight loss for people with mobility impairments and a 39% increase in physical activity. So we see initial evidence that telephone-based programs can have kind of this pattern of effect that we're hoping to find. So then moving into the current study here, it was meant to build upon that initial study that I just mentioned in a way that broadened the types of disabilities that were included. And I'll talk more specifically about what those were. So it broadened the population base. It included a nutrition piece. So the initial one was all physical activity focused. This one now included some nutrition coaching as well. And then it implemented an electronic platform in order to assist with the coaching and making it more easily replicable in future studies. So those are the ways that we tried to move forward here with this study. So the primary aim of this project was to develop and then test the feasibility and efficacy, so both of those things, in a telephone-based wellness coaching intervention, aimed at first developing and then sustaining physical activity and healthy eating behaviors within our population. And again, that cost-effectiveness piece, we really wanted to implement something that would be sustainable both for the participant as well as for the programmer. In order to be eligible for the study, individuals had to have a diagnosis of spinal cord injury, multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy, rheumatoid arthritis, stroke, lupus, or spina bifida, but they had to still be able to use their hands and arms independently in order to exercise. Body mass index was cut off. It had to be 25 or higher. So we were looking at overweight or obese individuals who were sedentary. So kind of an at-risk population of people who really needed to change behavior before expecting these outcomes in terms of health status. And then written permission from the physician. So there was initial referral from the physician, their involvement in getting individuals into the program. Not currently enrolled in a health promotion program, so this would be a new thing for them, so it's initiating the behavior. Age of 18 or older, and then ability to converse in English, because that was the language of our coaching. So here's just kind of a schematic of the study design. Referral sources, there were three primary sites for the study. The University of Illinois at Chicago, Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago, and then Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia was the third site that referred individuals to the coaching program. And so their role was the physicians were informed about the study, and then they referred individuals who they believed to be eligible to the study coordinator, who then went through the screening process to determine if they really were eligible. And if they met the criteria and consented, they were randomized into one of three groups. The control group, PEP 2, which was just physical activity coaching, and then PEP plus, or you see here PEP 2 plus nutrition, which is the physical activity plus nutrition coaching. So those two intervention groups differed in the nutrition coaching component. And they did both a pre-test and a post-test that we'll be talking about here in the analysis today. Those coaching calls that the two intervention groups did covered 8 months in three phases. So the first 4 months were weekly calls in order to bring about adaption and initiation of the behavior. And then those kind of phased out in hopes that behavior maintenance would set in. And it shifted to biweekly calls at 2 months and then monthly calls for the last 2 months. You see here just some of the additional intervention components. The first one there, recommendation to exercise from the physician, all three groups received. So that's the only piece that the control group also received. And we'll see that we think that actually may have had some impact on the results. And then the PEP, both the PEP and PEP Plus group received informational brochure on exercise at the start of the study, a device for tracking physical activity that was, a pedometer, that they could wear at their hip or on their arm. And they were asked to wear that throughout the study and report back to their coach the number of steps that they took as kind of a behavioral resource. They received a monthly newsletter that talked about the goals they had set and the goals that they had achieved and had some resources for them. And then, again, the PEP and PEP Plus groups differed in the inclusion of nutrition in the coaching that they received. And so they both got an initial program developed, and they both had those calls, but the PEP Plus also had nutrition included within those coaching calls. This here shows kind of what the coaches used throughout the 8 months. In the beginning of that, the hope was to increase initiation. So through problem identification and through an initial needs assessment, the coaches were trying to establish a way of increasing the initiation of a new behavior within the participants. So in the needs assessment, they looked at their current level of physical activity, their current perceived barriers, the individual's preferences, so what is it that they wanted to accomplish and how did they want to do that, their functional ability, and then their readiness to change. Where did they stand, and then what was the role of the coach in moving them then through the processes, stages of change. So from that needs assessment, the personalized program was developed. And here the coaches used, I'm glad that motivational interviewing was already talked about, so I don't have to go through the details of that, but the coaches used motivational interviewing in the coaching to elicit from the participants where they wanted to go, what were their goals, how did they want to reach those goals? And then the coach just served as a director, as linking them to community resources, helping them understand things that were available to them within the community and guiding the development of their goals. But again, allowing the participant to be the lead in that and really take the reins. Because the hope was not a drastic change that wouldn't be sustainable. The hope through this program was small changes that would then lead to greater benefits over the long term that would be sustainable for the individual. So if there was a change, a positive change in physical activity and healthy eating, they would move towards the long-term support. And if there wasn't, the coaches would go back. They would reassess and redevelop the program with the individual and try to move back through that process, ultimately moving them in to adherence, improvements in health status, and just a need for long-term support. For the purposes of this, of today, the outcome measures that were used are divided into proximal outcomes and distal outcomes. We didn't expect big changes in weight. What we hoped were big changes in precursors to weight loss. So we looked at changes in eating, healthy eating, so relative frequency. How often are you making healthy choices in what you're eating? Barriers to physical activity, number of barriers, and we used, for the healthy eating, we used the fat and fiber related diet behavior questionnaire. For barriers, we used the barriers to physical activity and disability scale. And then for participation in physical activity, we looked at minutes per week and used the physical activity and disability scale to do that. And then weight, which is often a difficult one to measure, both because this was a remote intervention and because there's not always access to scales that can measure the weight of people who use wheelchairs. But this was the only objective measure that we had. So the first ones were measured self-report, phone surveys, and weight was measured by the physician using their scale or an electronic chair scale and then reported back to the project coordinator. This here just shows for you how participants moved through the study. 113 were screened for initial eligibility. 102 of those were randomized into one of the three groups. 13 were lost to follow-up. And the only reason that we got, there were several that were unknown, but several of them offered time as a reason for lost follow-up, just commitment to the program. They didn't have the time to do it. And then about 11 were excluded from analysis. Some of that, six of those were because of hospitalization. Some were because of medical medication changes, movement into facilities, so moving into nursing home facilities, things of that nature. One started dialysis. So some reasons why they were no longer able to be included in the analysis. So ultimately here, what's analyzed is 78 individuals, 29 in the control group, 27 in the PEP group, and 22 in the PEP plus group. At baseline, what we see was no differences between the groups. Average age is about 46 years, 47 years. Weight is 86.2 kilograms. That's kilograms there, which is about 190 pounds. So if you see the BMI, that's 32, falling into the obese category. It's not a perfect assessment for individuals with disabilities, but it's enough to get an idea of where they started from. Gender, we see significantly more females there than males. And part of that we think may be due to the large number of people with multiple sclerosis that were in the study. I'll show that in a second. And then race, mostly African American and Caucasian, just a few people who consider themselves Hispanic. Disability here, 2/3 of the group consisted of spinal cord injury and multiple sclerosis. The other third, spina bifida, cerebral palsy, stroke, and then just one participant who had lupus. And so then you see there, multiple sclerosis is more common in women, and so that may have impacted then that difference in gender that we saw. So this just gets into some of the results, some of the preliminary analysis of what we found in the different groups. We looked here at choosing lower fat options. So how often do you choose a lower fat versus a higher fat option? And we nicely saw that the PEP Plus group, an increase is a good thing. And so the PEP Plus group had a significant increase in how often they chose lower fat options as opposed to the other two groups, which had no change. And if you remember, they were the only ones who received nutrition coaching. So PEP didn't, and the control didn't either. We see the same thing here with choosing higher fiber options, which includes choosing vegetables and fruits as well, a frequency of eating those. And so, again, we see a nice increase in the PEP Plus group only and not the other two groups from pre to post. So moving into physical activity and staying in kind of those proximal measures, Interestingly, we saw a significant decrease in all three groups in barriers to physical activity. And so this obviously warrants some further analysis, but one of the thoughts is that possibly that referral from the physician had an impact on the control group in reducing some of their barriers. Or the survey calls, they were contacted over the phone by an individual who talked to them about nutrition and physical activity and the assessment, and so maybe that played a role. We're not really sure. But it's an interesting finding and promising for the PEP and PEP Plus group. Here looks at total exercise. So this is aerobic and strength exercise. Again, an interesting finding. No significant changes here, but we see the PEP Plus group with a much more indicative change in physical activity, minutes per week, than either of the other two groups. Again, the reasoning for that's not totally clear. Possibly the impact of a more comprehensive intervention, it warrants further exploration as well. And then here, body weight. I think really what to point out here is that both the PEP and PEP Plus groups, so the top red line and the bottom green line that are going downward, are not significant, but they are a trend towards weight loss. And then we see a significant increase in weight in the control group. So weight management in this population is difficult, and it suggests that even a maintenance in weight is maybe something that's important to accomplish as the controls are increasing their weight over time. Really quickly there, that the body weight is based on just two of the sites. The Shepherd, the third site, was not ready yet for data analysis when that was run. So that N is much smaller on that body weight slide there. So in summary, there's initial promise. This program shows some promise. There's significant improvements in barriers, although we saw that in control as well. Improvements in eating habits, and then trends towards improvements in exercise and weight, again, showing promise. And what the implications is that this program addresses the most significant barriers often reported. So those of cost, those of transportation, don't know where to exercise, don't know how to exercise. These remote programs address those things. And have the potential to reach large numbers of individuals. And so I think that's similar. The online programs do that as well. And barrier removal is seen as a necessary prerequisite to behavior change and then ultimately health status. So the hope is that with further research, programs of this nature may result in wide-reaching improvements in health status. So just some brief limitations. It was a relatively small sample size. We need to look at some follow-up data. We need to know, did these things impact health status ultimately? Potentially some additional health indicators. And then some new ways to try to get a better measure of physical activity. It's a kind of a problem in general. So we want to try to replicate it in larger population, examine behavior maintenance, long-term impact, and further examine the relationship between barriers and behavior, try to tease that out. And then additional technologies, which the online program has talked about, and there's growing research in that area. So thank you. PEP is funded through CDC, and Jim Rimmer is the project director of it, sitting here behind me. So, thank you very much.